Good morning. I have a couple words I'm going to put on the board this morning. A little phrase I've been thinking about, meditating on, and doing a little studying this week, as a beast. I'm sure that all of us here are familiar. We're probably all familiar to a great extent with the Psalm 73. It's where my inspiration has come from this week, so I'd like to turn there. The psalm begins by saying it's a psalm of Asaph. I've done a little research about this man in the past, and it seems like this is a man of integrity. Wrote some real other things in the Psalms that were very edifying and very appropriate. It was very beneficial. So we'll begin in the first verse of the 73rd Psalm. It says, "Truly God is good to Israel, even to such as are of a clean heart. But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." So the psalmist or the writer here, and these are probably if they were, if we knew Hebrew and this was all written out in Hebrew, there would probably have been more rhyming to the words. These were recited or sung to music, is my understanding. That's what all the psalms are. But in our translating to English, sometimes it doesn't have quite the rhythm as it would in another language. But this writer here is saying it has to be written in retrospect. In other words, looking back on a place that he was in the past, and he said, "Truly, God is good to Israel, to God's chosen people." And I believe today that we can be some of those God's chosen people. We are, by the grace of God, if we are saved today, we are part of spiritual Israel. I believe that with all of my heart. And he says here, "God is good to Israel, even to such as are of a clean heart." So, looking back on the time that they lived in, there was still an aspiration to have a clean heart, just like today is being a Christian, being part of spiritual Israel today. The intent, the purpose of following God is to be able to follow God with a clean heart, not one that's contaminated, not one that has devious plans and ideas, but a clean heart, one that's wholesome and sincere and in line with God. And he says here that God is good to Israel, be it literal in his day or spiritual in our day. And he goes on to say, "But as for me," his personal experience, he said, "My feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." So, obviously, his personal experience was that he began to look around, just like we are susceptible to begin to look around where we're at today. All of us, we live in the world, we rub shoulders with other people, and it's real easy for us to begin to become distracted. Not just, we can become very distracted with with the things that the world has to offer as far as entertainment, as far as the opportunity to see and to know and to read and to view and all of that. It's all around us today, and we can become distracted with all of that. But he said here, my experience was that I begin to be impacted by that stuff that's going on around me. And my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. Almost slipped. We've all had those places, literally, where we almost went down. Some of those would be kind of funny if you could record it, and then somebody else could see how we were maybe flailing our arms and running, looked like we might be running backwards in place, you know, to kind of regain our foot. We've all had those experiences. And if we saw somebody, we might kind of chuckle and say, well, I know they almost went down. Well, he said, I almost went down, but he wasn't talking about physically falling. He was talking about integrity falling and collapsing. And we could go through and read, you know, the analogy that's given. He went through all of the little details in this psalm of how he was looking around and the things that impacted him and caused him to almost lose his footing, spiritually speaking. I want to get down now to the 17th verse. And this is where we kind of get our equilibrium back. And he says in the 17th verse, until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. Their end. The end of those that had become a distraction to him. You know, we can become distracted with things that have some level of interest to us. All of us can. There are things going on around us that can interest me just from a perspective of novelty. I've never seen that before. Like, wow. Can you imagine? Whatever it is, we could talk about the novel or the new things that we have seen or we have observed or maybe heard about, and we could start a whole conversation and become completely distracted about what we ought to be thinking about just because it's a new thing. But he says here, I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I understood the end of all of that that had caused me to be distracted. Could have been a novel thing. It could have been a deceptive thing. It could have been something with an ulterior motive of trying to subject me to do something that I wouldn't normally do. And he said, I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I got my equilibrium. I gained my footing, and I understood that all of that had an end that I didn't want. And you know that helps us when we understand the end of the novel thing. We understand the end of the deceptive thing. We understand the end of the thing that gratifies a portion of us that will cause us to be led into deception. Corruption and be violated, our integrity, or be morally violated, be ethically violated, be violated in our honesty and our integrity. All of those things, when we see the end of it, it helps us regain our footing when we could be distracted by it. So I'd like to skip down a little more and read some more about his sense of awareness. In verse 21, chapter 73 of Psalms. He says, "Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked in my reins." Have you ever been pricked in your reins? Pricked in the guide? You know, the reins are the things that they use to guide a harnessed animal, particularly a horse. Could be maybe something else, but the things that are guiding the direction that I'm going, and to be pricked or alerted to something to bring a caution. It's a warning light, like, you know, the one that comes on ever so often on my vehicles now, that I've got vehicles new enough to have these warning devices on them, is you're going down the road and maybe you're not watching things closely like you should, and it makes a little noise, some kind of little ding or little, some kind of little thing that alerts us, gets our attention, and we look down and there's this little yellow thing that looks like a gas pump from 40 years ago. Don't look like them today, but that's what they chose to put on there. They need something with a credit card slot in it, really. But it looks like something that my dad used to stop at years ago. That's the little picture that comes up on. It's telling me that everything's going fine, but you're fixing to run out of gas. So a prick in our reins is something that gets our attention and says this direction, the reins, the guiding things in your thoughts and your activities and all, you need to pay attention. There's an alert here that needs to be brought to the surface. He said, "Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked in my reins." There was something that caused me to back up. I kind of got my footing. And I realized by going into the presence of the Lord that there was an end to the things that I had been distracted by and maybe overcome by. And now that I've kind of got my footing and realized there was a negative end, and I don't want that negative end, my reins have been pricked. The direction that I've been leaning towards, there's a warning that's come on. And it said here, "Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked in my reins. So foolish was I and ignorant." I was ignorant because I didn't comprehend the end. I was ignorant because I didn't realize the direction that it was trying to take me. He says, I was as a beast before thee. So I wrote on the board, as a beast. And I want to think about that this morning and trust the Lord to help us. This is maybe might be considered kind of philosophical, but, and I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I want us to think about what it meant for him to say, the psalmist here, "I was as a beast before thee," before the Lord. A beast before the Lord. I think he had something in mind that he was comparing himself to a beast. And he was comparing his comprehension of how man and beast are to cohabitate. And so I'd like to read a definition of a beast to you that I found, a couple definitions. One definition says, "Any four-footed animal which may be caught, used for labor, food, or sport, distinguished from fowls, insects, fishes, and man, as beast of burden, beast of the chase, beast of the forest. It is usually applied to large animals." Another definition I found is, "Opposed to man, it signifies an irrational animal as in the phrase man and beast. So, wild beast. a beast. He said, the psalmist said, I was like a beast before God. What caused me to be like a beast was because my foot had slipped and my step had well nigh, I was on my way down in a direction that I shouldn't have went. And he said, because I'd allowed myself to, and when I allowed myself to almost be overcome, I was as a beast before the Lord. I'd like to go back to Genesis now in the first chapter and notice something here that it says about man and beast. It says in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26, he says, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So the design, the drawing, the engineering that went into man was God said, let us make man in our image, let mankind have dominion over everything else that's created. Okay? So by design, mankind is made in a manner to have dominion over any and all of the other creations, or all the creatures in this world. That's the design. In verse 28 it says, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. By command, man is to have dominion over all the creatures. By design and by command. All right? So, the equality between men, mankind, and the animal life is a figment of man's imagination. God designed it, and He commanded us to have dominion over all of that. Remember, the psalmist said, I was as a beast unto thee. So what does it mean for man to have dominion over the beast? Mankind is the only one that God designed or intended to subdue and domesticate another species. Not that one animal doesn't prey on another one. We call that an order of, I don't remember what the right term here is, but we have these things called top of the food chain, apex predator. That's something that there is no predator above that. Well, everything that a beast does is inferior to mankind's intelligence. And anytime we try to put ourselves on their level, we're really discounting what God intended for us to be. If you think the animal is thinking about trying to take advantage of you, I'm going to tell you, you're wrong. Stay with me. We've all been in those places, all right? A beast operates on a beast operating system. We know what operating systems are, right? Macintosh, Windows, all of that kind of stuff. So we know what operating system, we know what that means. And without some finesse and special programs, you don't get Windows programming working on a Mac. All right? So beasts have operating systems. Their operating systems are pretty simple. Food, shelter, protect their young, and self-preservation. That's what makes them operate. And beasts react to negative stimuli with beast operating systems. You threaten the young of a beast, and they go into protect the baby mode. You begin to mess with their food and try to take food away from them, and you will find out that they have special operating characteristics there amongst themselves and towards mankind. They operate like a beast. I found out the hard way as a young boy when the only time I've ever been bit by a dog is when I was messing with their food. And it was a little dog, and it bit me right through the fingernail or thumbnail, and it hurt really bad. But I brought it all on myself because the dog was operating after a beast operating system. You messing with my food? I go in to protect the food bowl. And they bit me. I thought it was cute because he was a little dog and I had him growling. But he didn't take it very, he wasn't very amused. And I would like to also say, please just bear with me here this morning. We have beasts in our world today that are in one of three classes. We have beasts that are wild. We have beasts that are domesticated. And we have beasts that are pets. Okay? But I want us to realize that every time we have one that's in a, we think is a pet or is domesticated, they'll revert to a wild natural operating system when they have negative influences in their life. Domesticated. I have some cows, and I want you to know I feel like they're domesticated. I can open the gate, and I can walk out in amongst my cows, and they don't run away. They'll let me get reasonably close to them. And if I'm bringing food, they'll come real close to me. They are not my pets. They don't like me to touch them. And they don't like to rub on me unless I'm not putting the food out quick enough. They're just domesticated. We have some cats that are domestic cats, house cats. Except they're not house cats at my house. They're yard cats. And they are kind of pets because they like, some of them like me to touch them. And occasionally they'll come up and touch me. I would call them pretty close to, and there are people that think that their pets empathize with them. All of this stuff, I'm telling you, is trained behavior. They're still a beast. They're still a beast. You don't believe that? You put some negative stimuli in their life and see what happens. You take their food away. You messed with their babies. The most mild cow I ever had. She was almost a pet. I could scratch her back. I could push on her side. And the day she had her calf. She thought she was a predator. And she reverted to a beast. And we've all had, some of us have had those kind of experiences. Why is all this important? And why am I talking about it this morning? The psalmist said, I slip back into a non-godly operating system. I became as a beast in your sight. I became as a beast unto thee. There were things that were pressuring me that were negative influences. And it caused me to lose my traction. It lose my standing. And I began to succumb to that. And I was as a beast. Now I want to talk about how we deal with a beast. And I'm going to use cattle, for instance. I've seen some people work with cows in a manner that they think the cows are being ornery. And I'm going to tell you, any time that I ask my cows to get in a trailer, that's unfamiliar territory. And they will revert, I don't care how domesticated they are, they revert to beastly operating system. And if I begin to scream and holler at my cows and beat on them, all it does is inflame that beastly operating system. I have to show them and coach them that it is a good idea for them to get into that trailer. Beating on pulling their tail, although it might be the straw that gets them to jump over the camel's back, so to speak, I am not able to go up and whisper in their ear and tell them this is for your best interest. Won't you please step up in the trailer? They don't get it. I got to deal with them like on the beast operating conditions. A cow turns left much more prominently than they will turn right. So if I'm trying, don't ask me why, it's just something I've observed. And if I get them in a position and I'm trying to get them to turn right and get in the trailer, I probably need to move the trailer. I need to do something where their basic operating condition system will make it advantageous for them to get in the trailer. I know, because I've done it, I can have a domestic bull, and he is so powerful, he could literally probably turn my trailer upside down if I prod him in the wrong way. But I've got him to get in the trailer because he thought it was a good idea and in his best interest. And I did that by giving him plenty of time and putting food in the trailer. And any big fat animal likes food. And you put food in the trailer and they eat and eat till they can't reach it anymore. And then finally they decide, you know, the most intelligent thing here, this is the beast operating system, okay, is to put a foot in the trailer so they can reach a little bit further. And before you know, they've got all 4 feet up in the trailer. And at that time, you can grab the door and slam it on them. And that little jolt from the back will make them jump towards the front. But you better be quick and latch the gate. Because they're only in that trailer to eat. They're not in there to go for a ride. They only got in there to eat. And you've got to catch them at that opportunity. Now I want to back up a little bit. The psalmist said, I was as a beast unto thee. I don't think he's talking about something that God looked down on with disgust. I don't think God was looking down on him with anger. He only realized that he became to God as one of those that reverted back to his basic beast operating system. You know what our beast operating system is? It's carnality. And if we're not careful, we'll get distracted by the things going on around us, and they will be something that entices us, intrigues us, pressures us, and we will revert back to the operating system that we came into this world with. Because of sin, we came in with a carnal operating system. You don't believe that? Let one of our little children that's not here, been here very long, get hungry and see what happens. They won't let you rest until they get something to satisfy their hunger. It's because that's most important. Just like your domestic or your pets are going to tell you when they're hungry. They're going to tell you when something is on their tail or is causing them to feel threatened. But how does God deal with those that revert to carnality? How should we deal with the beast that we're supposed to have dominion over? I had a situation once where we were trying to work some cows, and these cows, we just barely got them in a corral. We kind of got behind them, and I don't know if we had feed in front, and we were walking them along. You don't want to get them running because they liable to take out two fences then, but we got them going ahead of us, and we just kind of kept the slack up, and we got them in a corral. We got them in the corral, and we got the gate closed, and you know, it looks pretty secure, but I'm going to tell you, when you get several cattle in there and you start to try to do something with them, it can go from secure to insecure very quickly. And one of the people that was there to help us had one of these things. It was a plastic paddle-looking thing that's got things in it that make a noise on a long stick. And he got in the pen, and he started making lots of high-pitched noises with his mouth and hollering and slapping those cows on the back, and they went from distress to hysterical really quick. And I thought they were going to hurt all of us. That's not the way to deal with the beast. You got to be smarter than the beast. You got to open a gate to where they think it's a good idea to go in there. That's the way you got to work with them. You know how the Lord works with us? You ever made a mistake and wished you hadn't made that mistake? You know the Lord, when the psalmist had a picture, he said, "I became as a beast unto thee." He didn't mean that God immediately started slapping him around. But you know, God knows whether you're inherently going to turn left or inherently going to turn right. He knows your needs. And he's going to start working with you in a way to get you out of that basic operating strategy. And the psalmist here, I think he caught a vision of himself. Lord, I got in a place that I shouldn't have been, all because I got to looking around. And we can get in a lot of trouble today by looking around. He got to looking around and he said, "My feet were almost gone and my steps had well nigh slipped." And the only thing that got him back on track was when he went into the sanctuary of the Most High. He said, "When I got in there, then I understood what the end or what the conclusion of the distractions would be. And I got in there, and I got my feet back under me. And I got to where I was standing up, so to speak, at least spiritually speaking. And I got my bearings again, and I realized that I didn't want the end that the distractions were going to bring me. Instead, I wanted something different. I wanted to be in line with the Lord. And when I began to try to be in line with the Lord, I realized that back there when I lost my footing, I became as a beast. And the Lord didn't hit me over the head, and He didn't holler at me, but He got me into a sanctuary. What do you think about when you think of a sanctuary? I don't think of a prison camp. I think of a place where it's calm. It's peaceful. There's a level of security. If I get into the sanctuary city, I want to feel like that I'm safe, that I'm protected, that I'm encouraged to make good choices. You know, He began to deal with me like we deal with a beast. I don't ever worry about what the bull thinks. You know, I heard someone say one time that they didn't want the bull to think that they were afraid, that he was afraid of the bull. I don't care what the bull thinks. I just know he's a beast. And I don't want to be in a place where 2,000 pounds can push me up against a steel fence. I just don't want to be in that place. I'm going to go out of my way to go, because he's a beast. I'm going to deal with him like a beast. I'm going to go around the other side, and I'm going to open a gate, or I'm going to maybe encourage him a little bit to take a step. I'm not going to get in there and try to show him that I'm not scared of him. It don't make sense. He's a beast. I'm a man. I'm smarter than to think that I can arm wrestle a 2,000-pound bull. I can't do it. There's no reason to try. I'm smarter than that. Or at least I think I am. I'm going to put myself in a place where I can take advantage of the dominion that God said that I was supposed to have. I'm going to encourage him to do the beastly thing and go where it makes most sense to him. Food, shelter. I'm going to do what I can. And God done the same way. The psalmist saw this. I became as a beast. And Lord, thank you for dealing with me like a beast. You opened a gate. You gave me some food. You drew me into a place where I came into the sanctuary of the Most High. And when I got in there, I understood what the end of all of those distractions were. And I understood, you know, the Lord, if I could say one thing, in the course of me trying to be a minister, if I could say one thing and everybody could get it, I would say that God is your Father and He treats you like a loving Heavenly Father. If I could say that to the whole world and they could really get the power that's behind that, that's what I want to say. The Lord loves you like a real father. And He's going to, the psalmist, his inspiration or the thing that came to his mind was, Lord, I was as a beast unto you. I became something that was operating under a basic operating system, and you dealt with me like that. You didn't deal with me like I was your peer, because if I dealt with my animals, with my beast, with my cows like they were my peers, I would shout in their ear and say something like, if you would only go in that chute and let me clamp your head in that squeeze chute, I could pour something on your back that would get rid of those flies. It does me no good to explain that to the cow. They don't know. I've got to open a gate, and they think, in their beastly mind, this is my escape route. And I get them in there, I deal with them like a beast. I don't try to get them in there and for me to hog tie and throw them myself. I'm getting them in there because they think it's the right thing to do. And then I work with them. I take precautions to protect me. Accidents can happen, obviously. The Lord is going to deal with us in a manner for our best interest. He wants to draw us in. Where it looks like you've been at the end of your rope. You've been at wit's end corner. I have too. And at those places in our life when our feet are almost gone and our step is well nigh slipped, what does the Lord want to do but open up a little opportunity where we feel like this is what I ought to do because I'm acting like a beast. I'm going back to I'm trying to protect me and get us into a place that's a sanctuary. You know, I can't think clearly with a bunch of chaos going on around me. You know, one of the reasons that an auctioneer has that rambling chant, you know why? It's so you don't think about how much money you're spending. An auctioneer is jabbering and chanting and here bitter, whatever he's saying, and you get caught up in the moment and you say, yeah. And somebody else says, yeah. And before you know it, you bought something and paid more than you intended to pay. That's not the way the Lord wants to do with us. He wants to draw us in to a place that's safe. And when he gets us in the sanctuary, and we can understand, you know, if I'd have followed that path, it would have took me to a place I didn't want to go. The psalmist said, verse 22, so foolish was I and ignorant. I was as a beast before thee. Nevertheless, now we're speaking like someone that's domesticated, if you will. Nevertheless, I am continually with thee. Thou hast holden me by my right hand. He knows which hand to hold on to. He knows how to deal with us. And he says, thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom? Oh, we've all capitalized on this verse. But did you know it was in this chapter? Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee. I'm beyond the distractions and the sensations and the temptations and all of that that's going on. It's still going on, but I've got my feet under me now. And he said, whom have I in heaven but thee? What, it seemed like just a few minutes ago, he was saying I was envious at the foolish. And now he's got his feet under him and he says, all of that stuff don't matter. Who have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee. All this other stuff I'm going to discount to the point that it don't have an impact. And it's only because I got my feet back under me. You know, I've got this little calf at the house I've been bottle feeding. And I can go out to the shed and I can holler, here, baby, baby. And he comes running in because he knows I'm going to give him a bottle. But I'm going to tell you, that's a learned behavior. And he can forget it a whole lot easier than he learned it. My flesh, verse 26, and my heart faileth. But God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Oh, he's got his feet under him now. His feet's not slipped. He said, for lo, they that are far from thee shall perish. I understand their end. Thou hast destroyed all them that go a-whoring from thee. Their end is something I don't want to be part of. I want to escape that. Isn't that why we're here today? I want to escape the end that the world has to offer. And yes, it's bidden and it's chanting and it sounds like sometimes when we go out there that we're in the midst of an auction ring and there's maybe two rings going on. That's really confusing if you're at an auction where they got two rings going and it gets close enough where you can hear both sides. I'm going to tell you, it's really a lot of chaos going on. He says, but it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord that I may declare all thy works. Oh, this psalm ends up so good, so solid. And it started out on the wrong foot. Started out on the wrong foot. And I think so much, been thinking this week so much about how the psalmist that wrote all of this realized he saw himself as becoming a beast, not some thing that was trying to be aggressive towards God, but I hope somehow the Lord has helped me to be able to paint the picture. When we become a beast, the Lord's going to deal with us like a beast. And to deal with something like a beast, it means that you deal with them in a manner to do good for them. That's what the Lord's trying to do. He's not out here poking us with... there's all kinds of things to make cows jump. You can poke them. You can hit them with those electric shock things and make them jump. And I'm going to tell you, if they didn't jump the right way, you better be careful because you just unleashed some beast in them. Things can get really, really scary really quick. The psalmist was saying, when I revert back to carnal thinking, God looked on me like mankind should look on a beast. How can I help this poor man? What can I do? And he drew me in to a place that was a sanctuary. And when I got in the sanctuary, I understood where all of those distractions was going to conclude. Then I understood the end. Then I got my feet back under me. Then I was able to come to the place that there is none in heaven that I want besides thee. Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee. Dear ones, I don't mind saying, if I lose my footing, the Lord's going to deal with me like a beast. Because I know he's only got my good in mind. And he's going to draw me into a place where I can get my feet back under me. And where I can begin to be more domesticated. I can become his pet. And not only that, there is something that Jesus came to do to change us. He came to change us into a new creature. He came to elevate us to a place that we could be a joint heir with Christ and we could be adopted by God to be his child. That is the marvelous gospel that's out there for every one of us and all of mankind. If they could only understand that God is a heavenly Father and he wants to draw you into his sanctuary, you pray for me.